यमुना तीरा बन जारी, यमुना तीरा बन जारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन,
यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमद्भुजगांग्रे सभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 19 टेक्स्ट 35। अपि मे भगवान् प्रीतः कृष्णः पाण्डुसुत प्रियः, पैत्रश्वसेय प्रीत्यर्थम् तद्गोत्रस्यात्तबान्धवः, अपि मे भगवान् प्रीतः कृष्णः पाण्डुसुत प्रियः, पैत्रश्वसेय प्रीत्यर्थम् तद्गोत्रस्यात्त बान्धवः अपि मे भगवान् प्रीतः कृष्णः पाण्डुसुतप्रियः पैत्रश्वसेय प्रीत्यर्थम् तद्गोत्रस्यात्त बान्धवः Vaishnavis. Definitely. May unto me Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, Pritaha, pleased, Krishna, the Lord, Pandu Suta, the sons of King Pandu, Priyaha, dear, Paitra, in relation with the father. Shvaseya, the sons of the sister. Preeti, satisfaction. Artham, in the matter of. Tat, there. Gotrasya, of the descendant. Ata, accepted. Bandhavaha, as a friend. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is very dear to the sons of King Pandu, has accepted me as one of those relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. A pure and exclusive devotee of the Lord serves his family interest more dexterously than others who are attached to illusory family affairs. Generally, people are attached to family matters, and the whole economic impetus of human society is moving under the influence of family affection. Such deluded persons have no information that one can render better service to the family by becoming a devotee of the Lord. The Lord gives special protection to the family members and descendants of a devotee, even though such members are themselves non-devotees. Maharaj Prahlad was a great devotee of the Lord, but his father Hiranyakashipu was a great atheist and declared enemy of the Lord. But despite all this, Hiranyakashipu was awarded salvation due to his being the father of Maharaj Prahlad. The Lord is so kind that he gives all protection to the family members of his devotee. And thus the devotee has no need to bother about his family members, even if one leaves such family members aside to discharge devotional service. Maharaj Yudhishthira and his brothers were the sons of Kunti, the paternal aunt of Lord Krishna. And Maharaj Parikshit admits the patronage of Lord Krishna because of his being the only grandson of the great Pandavas.
Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Krishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Itinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Aschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpataru Descha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
So today morning, we are discussing the concluding section of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The first canto is largely setting the scene. The Bhagavatam has how many cantos? Does anyone know? It's 12 cantos, right. How many chapters? Do you know? Well, there are 335 chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So right now, we're in the first canto. And the first canto has how many chapters? 19 chapters. This is the last chapter, I already mentioned that. So now, we are towards the end. We are in the end of this chapter. So I'm using this as a whiteboard that I can write and draw certain things. So here, the Bhagavatam is setting the scene for the core conversation. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapter 7, in brief, Shukdev Goswami's story is described. How he became enlightened enough to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then from the 7th chapter till the 19th chapter, the story of Parikshit Maharaj is being told. About how he became ready to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And for that the backstory is told. It begins much before Parikshit Maharaj's birth. How Ashwatthama attacked Uttara and all that. That's telling us how glorious is the student. Nowadays is the age of podcasts. So people, if there's a podcast between two people and we are told, recommended, hear this. So you're like, no, okay, who are the people who are talking? You know, what are their qualifications? What are their interests? Why should I be interested in what they're discussing? So, especially if it's a long podcast, I want to know a little bit more about the people before I spend my time. So, the Bhagavatam is similarly, it is telling about us about the individuals who are discussing. And it doesn't focus so much time on Shukadeva Goswami. It focuses much more time on Parikshit Maharaj and his backstory. And one reason for that is, from a practical perspective, the lives of saints are not very interesting. Now, what do saints do? They wake up, they meditate, they pray, they study scripture. Now, of course, there are some saints like Srila Prabhupada, those lives are very adventurous. But in general, it is the lives of kings. They are involved in the world. They are much more dramatic. They are much more interesting. So, if I work, one of my services is writing, I work with authors, publishers. So if a book publisher has an opportunity to publish, you know, one book of a biography or autobiography of a business magnate and autobiography of some saint or a biography of some saint, which is likely to sell more, isn't it? Now, if a business magnate became a saint, that will sell the most probably. Or somebody who's a spiritualist who came back and became a business magnate, that might also be interesting. But in general, people who are involved in the world are much more interesting for people who are involved in the world. So the Bhagavatam spends a lot of time on Parikshit Maharaj's character development. And this series of verses is actually revealing the greatness of Prahlad, of Parikshit Maharaj specifically. So how is their greatness being revealed? So great, his greatness is being seen through his great gratitude. What is the great gratitude over here? Here we can say that he could have gone two distinct ways. Just now he has been cursed. Not only cursed, he has been cursed fatally. That he has been cursed to die in 7 days. And when this has happened, it is entirely understandable. If a person feels angry, if a person feels resentful, if a person feels enraged, and even it was for a minor indiscretion. A minor indiscretion requires a minor punishment, if at all there is to be punishment. There are some autocratic kind of kings. If you invite them to their house, they come and you take care of them completely. But you know, they get one mosquito bite in your house and they go up and they blow up that person's house. Well, that's outrageous, isn't it? So it was a minor indiscretion and there was a severe punishment. He's cursed to die. It would have been very easy for him to be resentful. Why did this happen to me? Because he says, I was a virtuous person. I protected Dharma. I fought against Kali to protect Dharma. In fact, the very point he is making now, he could have taken it in the opposite way. He said, I have glorious ancestors. That my parents were great devotees. Krishna was like a family member for my parents. Not like a family member. He was a family member. They were related. What is the use of having God as your family member if in spite of that such things happen to you? You know, he could have just become completely resentful and atheistic. In fact, I was at one place and I met one person and he told me, I believe God exists and I believe God is evil. I said, those two statements are contradictory. How? He says, if you really believe God exists and if you really believe God is evil, then would an evil God allow you to exist? Isn't it? No, tyrants don't allow any dissidents to exist, any opponents to exist. When Soviet Russia was ruled by communism, you know, without any war, 100 million people were killed, more than World War I, World War II combined together. Everyone who was suspected to be an opponent of the state was killed by the state. So, he says, would a God, if a God is evil and God exists, we wouldn't allow you to exist. That's why those two statements are contradictory. But still, it is possible that some people may become resentful of God. And they may say, okay, I did so much bhakti, I did so much seva, What is the use of it all if something so terrible happens to me? So, Parikshit Maharaj is instead,
he's not being resentful, he's being grateful.
And what is the great gratitude he's having? He's seeing that, okay, so many sages have come and they are helping me in my final journey, in my transition. So we all have this choice. Bad things happen to everyone in life. To think that I am a good person and therefore bad things should not happen to me. It's like getting into the arena of a bullfight. In India we don't have so many bullfights. There are, but if you get in the arena of a bullfight and there's a mad bull charging towards you and you tell, hey, I'm a vegetarian. Well, it's good to be a vegetarian, but don't expect a bull to not attack you just because you're a vegetarian. So similarly, just because we are good, to expect that the world will be good to us, that is unrealistic. People who are who they are, the world is who it is. Now that doesn't mean we should stop being good. Just because a bull is going to attack us doesn't mean we become non-vegetarian. But don't have the expectation. Just because I am good, all good things will happen to me. The world is what it is. And bad things happen to everyone in the world. So Parikshit Maharaj is actually showing us the example of how to respond to bad things. So generally, we can be resentful. We are all defined by the questions that we ask. So right now, if the question that you are asking is, okay, what is there for Prasad today after the program? Then now, okay, we all like food. We all may be hungry. But if that is the question that is going on in the mind, then the whole class will be like the sideshow. When will it get over? Then we will not benefit much from the class. But if the question in our mind is, okay, how can I understand the Bhagavatam? Then we will be more interested, we'll learn more. So we are all defined by the questions that we ask. By the question, not just the question that we ask, but the questions that drive us. The questions whose answers we are seeking. Somebody may be driven by the question, okay, what is the latest cricket news? What are the latest stock prices? Who won how much in the elections? Those can be the questions that drive us. And then that's what people will be looking for. So what is the question that is driving Parikshit Maharaj over here? The question he could naturally have asked is, why do bad things happen? Now bad things happen is a bad enough thing. But why do bad things happen to good people? That makes it even more frustrating. And it is, you could say, what is in level of frustration, you know, bad things happening is itself bad enough. Bad things to good people is even worse. But it's like worse things happening to the best people. That is the most unbearable, isn't it? So when that happens, that is a real challenge. So Parikshit Maharaj was one of the words that is used over here, Narottama, is among the best of human beings. He was a virtuous king, he was not power hungry, he was diligent, he was dharmic. And so a terrible thing happened to him. So he could have been asking the question, why do bad things happen to good people? And the same point, you know, I am a descendant of the family that was loved so much by Krishna. Why did this happen to me? But instead, his driving question is different. His question is, when bad things happen, it's not a question of if bad things happen, when bad things happen, they'll happen. When bad things happen, what do good people do? What do good people do? He has accepted that I am going to die. And now, what is the best way I can go through this transition of death? And then he's seeing that so many sages and saints have come here. And he's seeing that as the blessing of Krishna. And thus he's saying, it is Krishna who has blessed me, and that is why all these people, all these great saintly people, all these elevated souls have come here. And thus he is looking for blessings. He's seeking blessings amid the adversity that is there. A curse-like situation has come, but he's not looking like the curse-like situation. He's looking at the blessings within that situation. And thus he is grateful. Why would all these saintly people come? They come because Krishna has accepted me. So when distress comes in our life, we can see that distress as a sign that God has rejected us, that God doesn't care for us, and therefore we say, God doesn't care for me, so why should I don't care for him? So we will say to Krishna, ye yatha mam prapadyante. But we could say that actually, if a great difficulty has come in somebody's life, it indicates that Krishna trusts us, that we can take this difficulty. That it is only to great people that great tests come. That shouldn't bloat our ego, I am a great person. No, what it means is that there is potential for us to uncover great strength within us. Rather than thinking, why is this happening? Okay, now that this has happened, what can I do about it? How can I deal with it? What resources are available for me to deal with this? And if we keep that attitude, then we will find that there are blessings available even amid distress. And that is the mood that Parikshit Maharaj is demonstrating over here. Srila Prabhupada in his purport says that for a devotee is always dear to Krishna. And therefore Krishna's blessings come not only to the devotee, but even to the loved ones of the devotee. And those blessings, Parikshit Maharaj is confident that they are coming to me. Those blessings have come in the form of these saintly people being here. So in the Bhagavad Gita, in 17:16, Krishna talks about austerity of the mind. He says that tapo manasam uchyate. And this austerity or discipline of the mind. And the first thing he says is manah prasada saumyatvam maunam atma vinigraha bhavasam shuddhirityetat tapo manasam uchyate manah prasad. Manah prasad means cheerfulness, contentment. It is translated differently by different acharyas. Manah prasad can mean cheerful. It can mean content. Content here is not the content on somebody's website. Content means contentment, satisfaction. Most people are not content with the content on their social media. So, content, and it can also mean grateful. So, all of us have a choice in life. Either we can be resentful or we can be grateful. And the Bhagavad Gita is saying that this is a discipline of the mind. That means this is something which we have to consciously cultivate. Generally, when tapasya, when we mean, say for example, when we fast on Ekadashi. Now, when we are fasting, now some people hold fast to their fast. That means I've decided to fast, I'm going to fast all day. And some people give up their determination to fast. So it is an austerity. That means the tendency is, I want to eat. But I've decided I'm not going to, so I'm not going to. So it requires a conscious decision. Similarly, gratitude. When Krishna is saying that it is austerity of the mind, that means it's a conscious exercise of the mind to be grateful. So I'll talk about gratitude at four levels, and that will be the core of the session. And I'll use an acronym, EARS. Now sometimes we say be all ears. Be all ears means be attentive. Be all ears. The idea is that all my attention is focused on my ears. I'm hearing attentively. I'm eager to learn. So Shruti, we learn primarily through hearing. So we will try to understand how we can cultivate gratitude as an austerity of the mind, following in the example that Parikshit Maharaj is demonstrating over here. And this actually is based on a four-level understanding of gratitude. So first is, we can say gratitude is an emotion. I feel grateful. Now, generally, gratitude as an emotion that occurs when good things happen. When something good happens in life, we feel grateful for that. So, if we are searching for a job, and finally we get a good job, we are trying to explore a relationship, finally a good relationship clicks, we are sick and we finally become healthy. So when something good happens, the emotion that rises in our heart, that is gratitude. And we could say this is the basic level of gratitude that we all should have. At least be thankful when good things happen. Now, some people's minds are so negative that when somebody does something good for them, they don't say thank you. They say, why so late? When something good happens, they are not grateful that it happened. They are resentful it happened so late. So we always have that choice. For many people, even when good things happen, they may not be grateful, because they focus on something other than the fact that it happened. So we could say, when something good happens, our choice is either it happened, we focus on that, and then that will make us grateful. Or it's up to us. There are some people who just can't seem to cultivate gratitude. Actually, this is not even cultivating gratitude. It's at least just feeling gratitude. It's something good has happened. Their focus is not that it happened so late. And their emphasis is they're still ungrateful, they're still resentful. So such people, it's very difficult for them to have any kind of positive mental health. Because one aspect of mental health is we should be able to see the good that happens in our life. In life, there'll always be dualities. Kabhi khushi, kabhi gham. So, there'll always be ups and downs. So when we are talking about gratitude as an emotion over here, we are talking about this. That when something good happens, at least be grateful at that time. So there will be time when bad things happen, and it is understandable that we will feel down at that time. We can't avoid that. We are, after all, human beings. We live in a world where the externals affect us. But at least be positive and grateful when something good happens. That's the first level. The emotion that we experience when we feel, when something good happens to us. So this gratitude is not just an emotion. It can be expressed through actions. We can speak words thanking. We can do something for the person who has done something good for us. It goes beyond that. But as I said, emotion is the basic level of gratitude. Then after that, what is the acronym we are discussing? EARS.
Be all ears. So thank you. You are ears now. So A is attitude. Attitude, or if you want to go forward on that, it's a disposition. That means we look for things to be grateful for. Gratitude as an emotion is itself good. But it's more than that when something good happens and we feel good. Instead, we consciously look for what good has happened. Sometimes in the heat of our life, sometimes when we are rushing through things, this happened and I have to deal with this happened and this happened and so many things keep happening, and sometimes something good happens to us, something good is done to us, done for us by people, but we completely overlook it. So if we make it a conscious habit, it's a cultivation. This is where it's austerity. The first level is not austerity. It's just a feeling that comes okay automatically. But here, attitude means we look for things to be grateful for. We look for things to be grateful for. Actually, many times when we do our chanting, we may find my mind is wandering here, there, this is not happening, this is to be done, that is to be done. We start the chanting with just a short exercise. What am I grateful to Krishna for? You'll find the mind will become calmer and you can connect deeper with Krishna. Okay, what happened in my life that I'm grateful for? So if we before sleeping at night, just what am I thankful to Krishna for? Or what am I thankful in general for? I'll talk about Krishna a little later. What are the good things that happened in this day today? Just look back at it. I do some exercises on journaling. And I conduct some seminars. So one of the things we can look back at our day is, okay, what is something good that happened in the day? Be grateful for that. You can also sometimes, something good that I did in the day, be grateful that we could do that good. But this is a conscious attitude. We have consciously chosen action that we do to cultivate gratitude. And we see this, Srila Prabhupada also journaled. Once he started writing his books extensively and traveling, he didn't journal. But when he was on the Jaladuta, the ship which took him to America, there he wrote a journal. And in that journal, now he's all alone. He's going on a mission to America where it's unknown land and he doesn't know what is going to happen. But Prabhupada writes in his journal, he's grateful. He says he had taken some vegetable and some grains with him. But Sumati Maharaji, who was a sponsor, she had told the captain of the ship, Captain Pandya, that the Swamiji is a vegetarian. So take a good stock of vegetarian raw material, vegetarian stuff with you. And then Prabhupada saw that, he says, I thank Lord Krishna from within for enlightening Sumati Maharaji from within her heart to make all these nice arrangements. So Prabhupada is also exhibiting gratitude over here. It's something ordinary, nothing we could say spiritual or divine. Prabhupada's whole mission is still ahead for him as a huge challenge. But something for as simple as food, Prabhupada is expressing gratitude. So, when we look for things to be grateful for, we could say that two parts. So, good things that happened and good things that we did. Now, why should we be grateful for the good things we did? You may think others should be grateful to me for the good thing that I did. No, but it is, yeah, whether others are grateful or not, that's up to them. But actually, when we do something good, there is some amount of divine mercy over there. We could have made a mess of things. Our darker side could have taken us over. We might not have done that good thing. So, we are grateful that we could do some good. We are grateful that some good happened to us. This disposition is very, very helpful
for us to cultivate positivity in our life. Not just, so we don't just wait to feel grateful, we work to cultivate gratitude. So an emotion means it's almost like it's not in my control. So emotion is, emotions are largely like default responses. So if, say, for example, now the air conditioning is there over here, and say some of you are feeling cold. Now if you tell the person sitting next to you, I'm feeling cold. And that person says, don't feel cold, feel warm. What do you mean? I can't control that, isn't it? That's a sensation. You can say, okay, don't dwell so much on the cold. You can focus on the class. That's possible. But we can't really control our feelings. Just as we can't control the sensations that we have. Sensations are at the level of the body. Emotions are at the level of the mind. So both, to some extent, they're not in our control.
We are souls. Around the soul, there is the mind. Around the mind, there is the body. So the soul, mind, and body. Now, at the level of the body, there are sensations. Not all sensations have to be sensational. But there are sensations. We are always sensing something. There are sensations at the level of the body, and we can't control them to a significant extent. And similarly, emotions that come in the mind, we can't control them. Sometimes some people do something good for others, but they do good for someone else in a way that they make the other person feel bad about themselves. That means they do a favor for someone, but while doing the favor, they make the other person feel as if they are utterly worthless. Krishna talks about this in the 17th chapter as charity in the mode of ignorance. So it is we are doing something good, but the giver to whom we are giving, we are disrespecting that person. That is charity in the mode of ignorance. Why? Because actually charity is a good activity. But in one sense, when we are giving charity to someone, what we are doing is, we all have a debt of karma. And that person, by giving us an opportunity to give charity, by receiving that charity, that person is in one sense giving us an opportunity to decrease the karmic debt that we have. And that's why good charity is given with respect, not with disrespect. So, if somebody makes the other person beg, and finally we do some favor, well, that's actually good to give charity. But the idea is that be respectful in that. So, why I'm talking about this is that when we have that, when somebody does some favor for us, but they demean us while doing favor to us. Now, we can look either at the fact that they disrespected us, they demeaned us, and we can feel resentful. Or we can look at the fact that they did some favor, and we can be grateful for that. So that the disposition is, I look for things to be grateful for. I just came from a 4-month tour of the West. I was in America. I was in Texas in one devotee's house, or one person's house. This is a favorable person. So they had written a quote on their guest, on their home. It says on the wall, all our guests make us happy. Some by arriving and some by departing. And then below it was, your behavior determines which category you will fall in. So I told them, this is a very refined way of telling people, behave yourself. So, the thing is that there will be people who are agreeable, there are people who are disagreeable. We can't change that. We can either look for the good or we can look for the bad. So, the attitude of gratitude means that life will always be a mixed bag. Earlier I talked about this, that life will be a mixed bag, there will be ups and downs. So when we have the attitude of gratitude, then we focus more on the highs. And the lows, we notice them, but we don't fixate on them. So we focus
on the positives in our life. And we don't fixate. Okay, this thing happened. Well, that's just the nature of the world. It will happen, it will go. And that is the attitude of gratitude. So this is the second level of gratitude. Gratitude is not just an emotion, it's an attitude, it's a disposition. What is the next in the acronym? R. So R refers to reminder. So till now, we're talking more about the internals, how we look at things. Say, if I consider, what is my internal response? What am I looking at? But there are externals. And in the externals also, there is goodness in the world. And gratitude is a reminder for us that that goodness exists in the world. There are good things that have happened to us. There are people who have done some good to us. People who have been kind to us. Maybe right now we may find, you know, this person is so terrible, that person is so terrible. I was in California. I think California is the dog capital of America. There are the number of dogs are huge. In the Caucasian population, now the number of dogs is more than the number of children. But anyway, there was a car. The car had bumper cigarette. The more I get to know people, the more I love my dog. So, sometimes we may have had bad experiences with people. And yes, there are bad people that exist. But, you know, gratitude means we are looking at the outer world and we remind ourselves that goodness exists in the world. Reminder that goodness exists. In one sense, the opposite evidence is there for us all the time. If you look at the news, there is destruction, there is death, there is deception. All the bad news are there. But goodness still exists in the world. There are good people. There are people who have done some good for us. And to the extent we remind ourselves of that. So it's not just subjective. Oh, I am looking for the good. When the world is good and bad, I am looking for the good. So the first two were more internal, subjective. Here it is that, yes, in the world goodness actually exists. It's not just my attitude. There is a reality beyond my attitude. So this can actually help us restore our faith in humanity. Many people become cynical. Oh, you know, people are all selfish. People are all exploitative. Yes, some people are selfish and exploitative. And even good people sometimes have bad times when they may act in ways that are out of character with their character. But the goodness still exists in the world. And we need to remind ourselves of that. So, I was in America in one airport. Whenever I travel, I need crutches for walking. So, I use wheelchair assistant. So, at one time, we were caught in a traffic situation. So, we reached very late. My flight was early in the morning at around 4 o'clock. So after the pandemic, most of the airlines in America have had significant cut down in their staff. So the number of wheelchair assistants are significantly less. So I got in time, I got through the boarding, and then they said that we don't have any wheelchair assistants. And he said, they looked at their schedule, he says the wheelchair assistant will be free after 25 minutes. And as my flight boarding was after 25 minutes. So I said, okay, I'll walk along. So then I had one backpack on the front, one backpack behind, and I was walking along. I was struggling, panting, and I was trying to rush through. And then finally one person said, where are you? Can I help you? I looked at him. He was an American. He looked like a respectable person. Okay, then I had two bags. My laptop bag was behind me. That was a little heavier. Then I gave him that bag. He says, can you carry this? He says, okay, which gate are you into? I said, 32A. Okay. He started walking ahead. Actually, twice during my travels, my laptop has been stolen. So, initially when he just said that, can I carry back? I was relieved. And then, I thought, oh my God, you know, if he goes away, where will I find him? And it asked for his phone number. Hey, can you wait? I said, okay, yeah. says, can you carry this bag?
So he said, he gave me a strange look. He said, really?
He said, I can carry this one. No, can you carry this one?
So he looked a little surprised, maybe a little annoyed.
He carried that bag.
And then I took my laptop bag, put it back on myself. And then I walked on. And finally we reached there. Fortunately, my flight had got a little delayed. And his flight was after half an hour. So he started talking. I thanked him. And I told him, thank you for your help. He said, yeah. He was a little annoyed. He says, thanks, but no thanks. So something like that. Then I said, he said, I know, why you took that bag back. So he said, first, a part of you, we felt annoyed. He said, I am trying to help you and you think I am a thief. That I'm
But then, he said, he said he had attended some mindfulness workshop or something like that. He said, then I started trying to be more empathetic. And said, if I had been in your place, then I would also have been suspicious. So I don't like what you did, but I understand what you did. So I said, I was going to thank you earlier for your helpfulness, but now I'm going to thank you for your helpfulness and your thoughtfulness. So, he was a very nice person. So, actually, we all have encounters where people are kind, people are helpful. Now, there may not be many encounters like that, but they are there. So, this reminder that goodness exists in the world, it is important for us to not be very cynical. Now, of course, we can't be naive and assume that everybody is good. If you are naive and assume everybody is good, then we will be betrayed, we'll be cheated. So if you want to be nice, not naive. But this reminder that goodness exists in the world, whenever something good has happened to us, we remind ourselves of that. And that makes gratitude not just a subjective emotion or subjective attitude, but it becomes grounded in objective reality. And that brings us to the last part. What is the last in the acronym? S. S, it's a sign. A sign of God's goodness. Ultimately, goodness doesn't just exist in the world, in people. The goodness in people is a reflection of God's goodness. There's a lot of research that has found that gratitude is a very good quality to have. It's a virtue, and generally across the world's traditions, gratitude has been associated with God. Of course, we can and should be grateful to the people around us, but ultimately gratitude is associated with God. But as culture is becoming secularized, many of the traditionally devotional or theistic virtues are also being secularized. So what that does that mean? Some people say that I'm grateful. Okay. Yeah, whom are you grateful to? No, I'm grateful in general. Okay. At one level, it's better to be grateful than to be resentful. But actually, gratitude, it always needs some object to say that I'm grateful in general. It's like, suppose, on Facebook and people write their relationship status, single, married, or whatever. There are many things like that. But anyway, so somebody is saying, I'm married. Okay, whom are you married to? No, I'm married in general. Well, there is no such thing as marriage in general. Marriage is particular, isn't it? So, similarly, gratitude has to be directed somewhere. So when we desacralize means disconnected from the sacred. When we desacralize gratitude, we actually strip it of most of its potency. So gratitude is ultimately in this world a sign of God's goodness. That we are grateful because God is good. And gratitude is ultimately, it's not just a psychological virtue conducive to our mental good health. Gratitude is a devotional virtue because it reminds us of Krishna. It points us toward Krishna. So, I was in America, I was in a college program. So, after that program, they said that it was more on consciousness and how to be more mindful. So, after that, one boy came and he said to me, "You know, I like your talk, but I'm an atheist." I said, "Okay." So, I asked him, "Is that a compliment or a criticism?" So he said, "No, it is neither. It's just an observation." I said, "I like your talk." I said, "Okay." He said, "You're an atheist. Which God do you not believe in?" So he said, "What do you mean, which God? I don't believe in all of them." Okay, no, but tell me your conception of God, the God that you don't believe in. So he said, "I don't believe in a God who sends you to hell because you don't believe in him." So he says, "I also don't believe in such a God." So Krishna, he doesn't send non-believers to hell. Krishna, if at all there is hell, Krishna doesn't send anyone to hell. It's people's own karma that sends them to hell. And those who go to hell are wrongdoers, not non-believers. This is a fundamental difference between, say, the Abrahamic religions and the Dharmic religions. Now Krishna is not a vengeful God. "If you don't believe in me, I'll send you to hell." No. Krishna, if you do wrong, there will be consequences for the wrong, and that is you will go to hell. So he says that, and I also don't believe in that kind of God. So anyway, so then we started talking, and then he said that what happened. Now, generally, most people are not philosophical atheists. Most people are psychological atheists. What that means is, that see, philosophical atheism is where they have logical, they have gone into a lot of study and they have done this reasoning, that reasoning, and that's how they have become atheists. But that is not the same as psychological atheist. Psychological atheist means people just have had negative experiences with religion, negative experiences with what they thought was the experience of God, and that's why I say, "I don't care for this." So I asked him, "What happened? What happened in your life that turned you away from God?" So he said that, "You know, I grew up in a very orthodox Christian family, and in that family, in that denomination, we were taught that all expression of affection is illusion. It comes from Satan." And he says, "Therefore, my parents were never affectionate to me." Now, that's a very distorted understanding. That is not even the teaching of Christianity. It's just a perverted version of Christianity. But anyway, see, I grew up like that. I never felt my parents loved me. But then, when I was around 7 or 8, both my parents died in an accident. And then I became an orphan. We didn't have any relatives who could take me in. So I became a ward of the state. And then, so I said that, "Okay, that was the time I just gave up on God." He said that, "I felt my parents were terrible, at least, but I still had parents. Just lost both of them." And I said, they were Christians. Why did that happen to them?" So, okay. Then he was in one of the top universities in America. So I said, "It's remarkable from there. How did you come to this university?" Because generally people who become wards of the state, they get into bad association, and then they it's very difficult. There are people who do become successful, but it's difficult. So he said, "When I was 12, you know, I was adopted by a very good family. And they're not religious, but they were very, very good. And, you know, then I studied with their encouragement. That's how I got to this university." So I said, "That's great." Then I asked him, "You know, generally, what are the chances that a person at the age of 12 will get adopted by a family?" He said, "It's extremely rare. It's extremely rare because most parents, when they want to adopt, they adopt when children are relatively small. because they feel that they can have formative influences on the children. So it's interesting actually. Across one of my friends is studying the sociological effects of religious belief. He's doing his PhD in that, and his focus was on adoption. So he found that among all the religions in the world, Christians adopt the most, and Islam adopts the least, but the second least is Hindus. And it's interesting, Hindus and Buddhists have the same philosophy, but the way the philosophy is interpreted is different. In Hinduism, the idea is that, you know, what is the blood, what is the dynasty, where does that person come from? You know, I don't want to adopt anyone else. I don't want to adopt. And even if people adopt, they want to adopt somebody from their family, known relative. So there are huge organizations which Indian children adopted, and they're taken to America and Europe and other places. So in the Christian culture, they consider it a responsibility, a service to God to adopt children. The children that God gave you and the children that you took. So that's how people have many children. But the point is, Buddhists also have the same idea that, you know, people come from different kind of karmic bag. Everybody brings different karmic baggage. But that there is previous life and there is karma from previous life. That is a similarity. But the Buddhist idea is that when you take up some unknown karmic baggage, then that will decrease your karmic load. So their consciousness is actually more compassionate. Whereas sometimes the Hindu consciousness becomes more calculative. And sometimes I've seen parents, they will go through painful IVF for many, many, many times. And still they will not adopt a child. But the point I was making over here, coming back to our thing, is that, so he said that the probability of somebody being adopted even at the age of 12, even among Christians or wherever, is very less. So he says, how do you see that? I say, I see that it's great fortune. So I said, hey, wait a minute. See, when you were born in an unloving family, when your parents died, you attributed that to God. You blamed God for that. Why did God do this to me? Now, when you got good foster parents, when you got good parents, you are saying that that is fortune. Says you have to be fair to God. So either attribute both to God or you attribute both to fortune. It's like you are attributing the bad things that happened to you to God and the good things that happened to luck. He says that is unfair. So ultimately for us in our life, bad things have happened and good things have happened. It is for us to decide which evidence we are going to focus on. Which evidence are we going to dwell on? That is ultimately the sign. When we are looking for the sign of God's goodness in the world, if we look at our life, you know, we can look for the evidence of misfortune, or we can look for the evidence of fortune. And depending on that, our attitude towards God will be there. So we see Parikshit Maharaj, which evidence is he focusing on? The fortune. Not the misfortune that I was cursed to die, but the fortune that, oh, there are so many sages who have come here. And that's why it's a discipline of the mind. Gratitude is a tapasya. In general, what happens is, the bad things that have happened to us, we remember those. And the good things that have happened, even if they have happened to us, we take credit. I did something. Well, I told him, you know, it's not that when these parents came to adopt you, you didn't do anything special. You just stood out more prominently, more erect among the kids. No, what did you do? It was, we can look at the evidence of goodness, we can look at the evidence of the bad in the world. So he said, hey, I never thought about it like that. I'll need to think more about it. So we see that for us, when there is something good happening in our life, we can focus on that. As you mentioned, some of you noticed that I use crutches for walking. So when I was one, I got polio. And I don't remember it at all. I was walking and one day just I fell down and never could walk normally after that. So one of my earliest memories is of my mother talking with some relatives or neighbors. And they had come, they were consoling my mother that, you know, your child has got polio. And my mother said, she said that, you know, whatever he lacks physically, God will provide him intellectually. Now, I don't know if at that time I had... I don't know if at that time I had shown any signs of intellect or anything like that. But somehow, when I heard that, I had two thoughts came in my mind. My first was, who is this being called God who decides such things? I was probably 2.5, 3 or something like that at that time. But the second was, somehow from that time onwards, I identified much more with my intellectual side than my physical side. So yeah, there are many normal games I couldn't play. But I like to read, I like to study. And that's how I grew up. So when people see me, the first thing they notice about me is my crutches. But I don't think about them. For me, my crutches are like my glasses. I can't see very well without my glasses. But you put on your glasses and move on with life. Like that, pick up your crutches and move on with life. So now when I look back, I see that this sign of God's goodness, that my mother didn't actually preach to me, but just by the word that he spoke, she gave me that disposition, that training, and that helped me a lot. So for us, when something good happens, we don't just see, oh, something, it's a fortune. We see it is Krishna's mercy. When Srila Prabhupada came to America, at that time, he wrote the song Markine Bhagavad Dharma. And the first thing he writes over there is, Boro Krupa Koile Krishna Adhamera Prati. So you have been very merciful to me. And when I read that, I was thinking, Prabhupada was alone. He had no contacts, practically no contacts, certainly no followers. He had very little money, next to no money at all. And he had just had a heart attack. Two heart attacks, in fact. And now he had landed in America. So in one sense, nothing was going right for him. The only resource that he had, which was working, was his body. And that also had been hit severely. So what is there to be grateful for? What is he saying? Krishna, you are very merciful to me. So what Prabhupada was grateful for? Krishna, you are so merciful to me. What was Prabhupada's gratitude? There was, in one sense, there was no material facility. So what was he grateful for? Prabhupada was grateful because there was spiritual opportunity. He said that his Guru Maharaj had told him more than 40 years ago, speak in the English language, spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And he said, now at the fag end of my life, I have at least the opportunity to serve my spiritual master. And for that opportunity, I am grateful. So this is an extraordinary level of service attitude. That when we have some service that we have to do, we can either look at the facilities that we don't have for that service, and we can feel resentful. Oh, this person is not cooperating. This is not happening. That is not happening. Why is this not right? Or we can be grateful that we have the opportunity for service. And Srila Prabhupada is seeing this opportunity. He's not just seeing this, oh, this coincidence happened. I met this Mr. Agarwal and his son sponsored. He's seeing beyond it all that it's Krishna's arrangement. So Prabhupada is showing us as the sterling example of gratitude. Gratitude for just having the opportunity to serve. And if we are grateful, If we are purposeful, if we are determined, just to grab any opportunity that we have, eventually facilities will come. Eventually, initially Prabhupada had no one, and then Prabhupada had thousands and thousands of people all over the world, eager to do whatever he wanted him to do. But Prabhupada, it was not that he was grateful only when he had thousands of people. Even when there was no one, Prabhupada was grateful. Because Prabhupada saw that his connection with Krishna depended on his service, not on the results of his service. That I do service, that itself connects me with Krishna. I get the opportunity to make garlands for Krishna. I get the opportunity to cook for Krishna. If after that somebody comes and appreciates me for the service that I have done, that's good. But that alone does not determine my connection with Krishna. So our service itself determines our connection with Krishna. And Prabhupada was grateful for that opportunity for service. And that opportunity is abundantly available for each one of us. Wherever we are, any service we can take up. We can just speak about Krishna to someone, offer a book to someone, say invite someone to a temple. Even if we can't do anything directly spiritual, just be kind, be encouraging, be polite, be friendly. And that, who knows, our one act of kindness can be a sign for them of God's goodness. And that can start their spiritual journey. So the more we cultivate gratitude, the more we can inspire others to cultivate gratitude. The more we cultivate devotional gratitude, the more we will inspire devotion and gratitude in others. And that is a very organic and very healthy, very sustainable way of both deepening our Krishna consciousness and expanding Krishna consciousness through us to others. So I'll summarize. I discussed 5 main points today. The first point I discussed was about Parikshit Maharaj's gratitude. How, instead of being resentful, that despite being so virtuous and so devoted, despite being a descendant of such great devotees, such a terrible curse had befallen him. Instead of that, not why do bad things happen to good people, but when bad things happen, what do good people do? That was his question. And yes, Krishna has been so kind that the sages have come to help me in my final journey. He was grateful for that. And with that theme, I took an acronym of how we can cultivate gratitude. What was the acronym? Yes. E was emotion. So here, at least when good things happen in our life, we feel grateful. So in one sense, this is the most basic level. And sometimes we may lack that also because we are not grateful that some good thing happened. We are resentful that it happened so late. So if that's happening to us, catch ourselves. No, let me be grateful that it happened. This is the most basic level of gratitude. Then second was attitude. So attitude means we don't just wait for the good feeling to come. We work for that good feeling by consciously seeking to notice what are the good things that are happening in our life. So maybe before we start our chanting, or every night before sleeping, we look back and see, okay, what are the good things that happened in my life? And these two, in one sense, are subjective. They are inside us. They are about how we look at things. But beyond how we look at things, there is how things are. And that is the last two parts. What is the last part? The second last part? R was reminder. So reminder that goodness exists in the world. So we may have had bad experiences with people, but there are times when people have been good to us. So we remind ourselves of that. That will prevent us from being cynical. That will keep our, if not our faith, at least our positivity, openness towards people and humanity at large. And the last was, S was sign. It's a reminder of people's goodness and sign of God's goodness. Why the difference between sign? Because you know, we don't really see God directly in the world. But in our life, good has happened, bad has happened. Either we attribute both to God or we attribute both to fortune. And if we focus on the good that has happened, we see that as the evidence of God's goodness, as Srila Prabhupada did, as my mother taught me to do. Then we will find that gratitude will actually become a devotional virtue for us. It will not only be conducive to our emotional health, but will also promote our spiritual health. And when we are grateful in this way, we can also radiate devotional gratitude to others. So Prabhupada was grateful, even though he had no facility when he was on the coast of America. He was grateful that he had the opportunity for service. And we all have abundant opportunities in our life. So we all can cultivate gratitude similarly. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grateful. So, any questions or comments? Yes, please. Yes, Raj Parikshit Prabhu. We have a mic. Yes. Yes, Prabhu, you can speak. I'll repeat the question even if the mic is not working.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Hare Krishna, Dhanat Pranam Prabhuji. I'm really grateful to you for giving such a class on gratefulness. So I want some clarification on the point of reminder. Is it specific to goodness of people, and can we expand the scope of this goodness beyond people? And one more thing, that is it related to only past things happen to us? So if we go in the future, so we cannot trust everyone and we cannot doubt everyone also. So how to have a balance?
Yes, so is reminder related only with people? No, I said reminder that goodness exists in the world. So it could be like good things also happen to us. Sometimes some good things are done by specific people, but sometimes some good things just happen, we could say naturally. We are looking for some job and we just come across some job opportunity, job opening, we're looking for a house and somebody tells us there's a house over here, but sometimes we find a house somewhere, somehow by coincidence or whatever you want to call it. So it doesn't have to be people, but it's just that the world is not all a bad place. That is, in one sense, see, our mind is designed to focus on negativity. And that's not a bad thing. It's a need for survival. If we were walking in a forest and there's something slithering below, say it's a snake, if we don't notice it, the snake could bite us and we could die. On the other hand, we're going through a forest and there's a beautiful rose. We don't notice its beauty. Well, we're not going to die because of that. So the point is, in one sense, noticing problems is necessary for our survival. Not noticing all problems, certainly not fixating on problems. But the point is, biologically we are much more vulnerable to danger than we are to pleasure. So, you know, pleasure is limited. How much pleasure can we have? But pain can almost be unlimited to the point of death. It's not unlimited, but it can take us toward that. That's why our minds are more attuned to notice the negative. And that's understandable. But the point is that if that orientation of the mind becomes our default or unchangeable fixation, then it's a problem. That's why we need to be able to, we need to make a conscious effort to look for goodness. And yes, the balance is that it's in a, whether we are not naive and trusting everyone, we are not cynical and distrusting everyone. It's more on a case-to-case reciprocal basis. So that has to be object, we have to use our intelligence for that in the future. But I'm talking more about what we have experienced in the past. Within that, what do we focus on? Okay? Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, please. Yeah. So, if we see something good happening, if we see it as God's mercy, then if something bad happens, how do we see that? Do we see it as God's cruelty?
No.
So, okay. See, the point is that anything that happens, every action, say for example, right now, I'm feeling cold. So, now this action could be explained at various levels. Maybe I'm just sitting below the AC. It could be because I'm not wearing warm enough clothes. It could be because I have temperature. It could be because maybe my body is more vulnerable to cold. It's more thermally sensitive. It's maybe because I come from a warm part of the world to a cold part of the world. Every action can have multiple causal boxes in which it can be placed. That means this can be explained, this level. So we have to use our intelligence to place an action in the most constructive causal box. Okay, what is the cause of this? When the devotees had done the first Rath Yatra in London, at that time, they decided to do a giant Rath. But unfortunately, they did not expand the size of the wheels. So the Rath went for some distance and it collapsed after that. And the devotees were devastated. They wrote to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada, did the Rath collapse because of our poor devotion? Is Krishna displeased with us? And Prabhupada said the Rath collapsed not because of your poor devotion, but because of your poor engineering. So, in general, there is no need to escalate everything to the invisible ultimate level. Now, the ultimate also plays a role, no doubt about it. But we have to look for the most constructive, most helpful explanation. See, if I am feeling cold, and I say, what to do, you know, there's climate change, it's all dirty capitalism. Well, how is that going to help me? If I'm feeling cold, okay, the expression, maybe I need some warm clothes, maybe I need to move aside somewhere. So in general, focus on the most constructive explanation for things. So if something bad happens to us, what is the constructive explanation? We can look, did I make some mistake? Did somebody else try to do me in? Was it just I was at the wrong place at the wrong time? So when something has happened, what is in our control? What is not in our control? So we focus on what is in our control and try to learn something from this. So when something bad happens, it is not Krishna doing that thing to us. It's generally our own karma because of which it is happening. But even through that, there is something that Krishna is wanting us to learn. Krishna wants us to grow through that. So what we focus on is, what is there for me to learn? How can I grow through this? So we can be Krishna conscious in every situation. But the idea is, we want to be anukulyena Krishna anushilanam. We want to be having a favorable relationship with Krishna. So when something good happens, even at that time, it's not that we neglect the immediate cause. Say, for example, if you were sick, if a loved one had to go through a dangerous surgery, and we survived, it's Krishna's mercy. It is Krishna's mercy, but it's also the doctor's expertise. If we are with the doctor, don't tell it's Krishna's mercy. Thank the doctor. Isn't it? We don't want to be dehumanized and be impersonal. So basically, we acknowledge the immediate cause, but we also acknowledge the ultimate cause. So essentially, our vision of things should be such that it is constructive for our devotion, for our relationship with Krishna. And that's why when something good happens, it's not just, oh, it's Krishna's mercy. That's true. But okay, what made this work? How did this work out? What can I do so that I can repeat the same thing? We have to learn that. This Krishna's mercy does not mean that we don't look at any other factors. And when something bad happens, okay, we look at the other factors. We say, okay, it is not that Krishna caused this, but Krishna let this happen. And then what is Krishna teaching me through this? We look at it that way. Okay. So, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki. Itai Gaur Premanande. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.